Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Well,
here's John Williams.
I've got some big thoughts, maybe you do too today, about the James Comey testimony. Somebody called it Super Bowl. They said this is going to be the Super Bowl of congressional testimony. And I thought it was riveting-ish. It was interesting. It really was. But if you were expecting a bombshell, like the Republicans paint him into a corner or the Democrats prop him up so that he can lower the boom, I don't think either of those things happened. There were some great quotes, and I'll be using this one, Kim, just periodically. In fact, I was live tweeting about it during the testimony.
You and Donald Trump Jr.
Oh, no kidding. Was Trump Jr. doing it?
He has been tweeting nonstop.
God, I can't believe I missed that.
Well, we can go back and read them to you if you'd like.
Well, if you have one that you think is maybe noteworthy or representative of the whole, I'd be interested.
It's interesting because even though the president isn't tweeting.
He was not tweeting. He hasn't tweeted in 24 hours.
I mean,
I'm worried about him, frankly.
I can't say for sure, but it appears maybe his son has taken over for the day.
Hey, Dad, you don't have to do insane stuff today. I'll do the insane stuff. Who's your big insane daddy? I'll help you out right here, said the son.
Yeah.
I thought that the statement from Comey when he wanted to express clarity about the fact that the Russians meddled with the election, one of the senators was asking him about that, and he said, is it clear to you that the Russians were meddling in the election? Did they do this and did they do this? And he says, yes. And then he says, there's no fuzz on that. There's no fuzz on that. Well, now that's a cool way to say, I'm absolutely sure. Like, ask me. So my tweet was, hey, John, do you want another beer? Yeah. You sure? Oh, there's no fuzz on that. See, this is how I'm now going to tell people I really mean what I just said. What did you just hand me here, Elle? If you just gave me your phone.
I just gave you my phone. Hopefully
Donald Trump Jr.
Phone is still lit up.
Donald Trump Jr. tweeted, I'm pretty sure that Comey's testimony put his own character on trial. Leaks, admitted weakness, Lynch double standard. Come on now.
In response to
everything.
There's another tweet.
And the one before says, today's winners at Real Donald Trump, the Dow, America. And then it says, losers, Comey, Loretta Lynch, hashtag MSM, but especially NYT, which means mainstream media, for those who don't know what MSM is, especially the New York Times.
Right. Well, but they were specifically asking Mr. Comey, and he's made this point since he has been released from his duties, but he has a couple of times now made the point that it's very frustrating in the FBI to see something happening in the media that you know not to be correct. It's not their job to call it out for being true or not true. In fact, they decidedly stay away from that, but they cringe at times when they see things being reported and then discussed. And so he was asked specifically about an article that appeared in February, in which it was described evidently in some great detail. I haven't gone back and looked at it. That the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians. And they said, is it fair to say that that article is almost completely inaccurate? And Comey said, that is correct. And that's not good for the New York Times or any of us. That's not good for the New York Times or any of us. I mean, we still need the mainstream media. We still need the New York Times and WGN radio to do the best we can. And there's Comey saying that, yeah, that story was pretty much wrong. We don't know what was wrong about it or how it was wrong. I haven't even gone back to see the story. But, okay, so Donald Trump Jr., you get that point. But remember, Donald Trump Jr. is not 14. He's well out of his teenage years, and there he is, tweeting away, you got my dad. Well, guess what? You're the losers. Who's the losers now, New York Times? said Donald Trump Jr. on Twitter. But to me, the no fuzz on that was great. Also, you could just tell when he said, Lordy, I hope there's tapes, that was going to be a scroll near you. And suddenly it appeared on television screens across America. Because after that meeting that Comey had with Trump, he got out of the meeting, went to the van, sat there, and then just started to type down his notes. He said, Lordy, if the president says Comey better hope there aren't tapes. Comey says, Lordy, I hope there are. I hope there are. Because it may be your word against mine. Maybe there are tapes, Mr. President. Roll tapes! It's 1:13 on WGN Radio. This is John Williams. We did not broadcast the full 3 hours of testimony, but Elif and I listened to it and took notes. Here are some highlights for your edification. James Risch is a Republican from Idaho. And you could tell early on that the Republicans, and remember, the Republican National Committee was somewhat involved in sort of the determination of the questions, the sort of building of the case for the president or against the former director, say. But you could tell somehow everybody got on page. And one of the thoughts was, is that when the president pulled Comey into that dinner and said, I hope that you can steer clear of this. I hope that you can help General Flynn out. He used, the verb was hope. I hope that you can let this go. Hope was the word. And we've all heard that and thought about that a little bit, but we didn't think about it as strategically as they did. So James Risch, the Republican from Idaho, talks to former Director Comey this morning about that word.
There's 28 words there that are in quotes, and it says, quote, I hope, this is the president speaking, I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. He is a good guy. I hope you can let this go. Now, those are his exact words. Is that correct?
Correct.
And you wrote them here and you put them in quotes?
Correct.
Okay. He did not direct you to let it go?
Not in his words, no.
He did not order you to let it go?
Again, those words are not an order.
No. He said, I hope. Do you know of any case where a person has been charged for obstruction of justice, or for that matter, any other criminal offense, where this they said or thought they hoped for an outcome?
I took it as a direction.
Right.
But, I mean, this is the President of the United States with me alone saying, I hope this. I took it as, this is what he wants me to do. Now, I didn't obey that, but that's the way I took it.
You may have taken it as a direction, but that's not what he said.
Correct. He said,
I hope.
Those are exact words. Okay. Correct.
You don't know of anyone that's ever been charged for hoping something. Is that a fair statement?
I don't as I sit here.
Okay. You know, that's a strategy. That's a tact. You can take that. Whatever the president said, he said, I didn't order you to let it go. I didn't command you to, I didn't direct you to let it go. I said, I hope you can let it go. And while Comey reads it one way, the president may have intended it another way.
When I heard that, the thing that went through my head is, what is the definition of is? That went right through my head.
Bingo! In fact, I immediately tweeted that. I said that Risch's definition of hope is the new is. It's so Clinton-esque.
It is.
Because I think most of us know exactly what was happening there. But since the president wasn't specific enough, or was in fact cagey enough, they have this wiggle room. Senator Dianne Feinstein was talking about how Comey handled Trump's request for help on Flynn.
Why didn't you stop and say, Mr. President, this is wrong. I cannot discuss this with you.
It's a great question. Maybe if I were stronger, I would have. I was so stunned by the conversation that I just took it in. And the only thing I could think to say, because I was playing in my mind, because I was going to remember every word he said, I was playing in my mind, what should my response be? And that's why I very carefully chose the words. And look, I've seen the tweet about tapes. Lordy, I hope there are tapes. I remember saying, I agree he's a good guy, as a way of saying I'm not agreeing with what you just asked me to do.
He's a good guy, the president said. I hope you can look the other way. And his response was, he's a good guy, but not that I'll look the other way. There were so many times in the testimony today and yesterday, for that matter, when the foreign intelligence officers were speaking to the same panel. There were so many times where the president uses one word and Comey or somebody else uses another. And then they sort of battle back and forth on the words and they finally come to a rest, but it's not clear which of the words or interpretations just carried the day. In fact, yesterday there was the business of loyalty and honesty, and it came up again today. Here is Senator Marco Rubio. And remember that the president asked for the former FBI director's loyalty. And Comey said, I can give you honesty. And then it was loyalty, honesty, tastes great, less filling. And so finally, the president says, honest loyalty, or was it loyal honesty? Those are two entirely different things. Honest loyalty is not what Comey was pledging. He was pledging loyal honesty. Comey's pledging to be honest. The president wants him to be loyal. And the two of them are sticking their favorite word second and the other word first. I don't mean to confuse you, but here's Rubio on this very point.
The president has asked three things of you. He asked for your loyalty, and you said you would be loyally honest.
Honestly loyal.
Honestly loyal.
Honestly loyal. That's critical, and nobody else seems to pay any heed to this, but I do. Those are absolutely different things. They could go together, but the FBI director is saying, no, they were not. Okay, Senator Rubio has more to say. And I think this is one of the points scored. That is, we have been following this story, which the White House would prefer we not follow, for weeks and months now. And it may, in the long run, not be in our best interest that we continue to read this on the front page of papers and then dissect it on shows like this. Senator Rubio says this.
You know, this investigation is full of leaks left and right. I mean, we've learned more from the newspapers sometimes than we do from our open hearings, for sure. You ever wonder why, of all the things in this investigation, the only thing that's never been leaked is the fact that the president was not personally under investigation, despite the fact that both Democrats and Republicans and the leadership of Congress knew that and have known that for weeks?
I don't know. I find matters that are briefed to the Gang of Eight are pretty tightly held, in my experience.
Comey went on then to describe the number of people who were privy to his thoughts, and it was a kind of long list. So if you wondered where the leak begins, it wasn't all that helpful. But I hadn't thought about that before, Marco Rubio. Everything has been leaked to us, every damning thing true and maybe not. But nobody has said, oh, by the way, the president is under investigation. In fact, we were under the impression going into this thing that Comey was going to stand there and say, absolutely, I disagree with the president's contention that three times I told him he wasn't under investigation. That's a more nuanced point than I just made it sound. But there it is. Comey, in his testimony yesterday and today, said that I did, in fact, tell him he wasn't under investigation. Well, why wasn't that leaked? Why wasn't that version of that leaked all along? Marco Rubio wants to know. We don't have a good answer to that. Oh, we do. I don't think the media loves that narrative, but that's beside the point. Okay, it's 1:22. So then Susan Collins steps up. And finally, I thought, but the elephant in the room is, this is all good, but there's a question that has to be asked, and nobody's asked it yet. Susan Collins did. And that's next. This is John Williams. How are you? What a lovely day in Chicago. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio downtown. The Addison Russell news, the popular Cubs shortstop, is unsettled and upsetting. We'll talk more about that in the 2 o'clock hour. A little after 2 o'clock, we'll get into that a little bit. But we're going to take our time with this story today of James Comey's testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee. We're sort of breaking it down step by step, but also waiting for the president's attorney to speak. Mark Kasowitz is expected to testify before the same panel. He had some prepared remarks. There was a draft that was written, and you can read that, but maybe we shouldn't dwell on that because Kim Gordon is now telling me that maybe his commentary now is going to be different than what we've got our hands on. Is that right?
That's correct. It appears that is a draft that we have, and what he's going to say now is something different.
All righty. Maybe it is being edited in reaction to what Comey has already said, or some of the other senators. But you know,
and by the way, the Comey closed door session has wrapped up. He has left the building.
Several times they said, "Well, I will address that in closed session." I wonder if the senators will be a little more forthright with the answers to some of those questions, because there were several times where James Comey said, "I can't speak about that publicly." Not as often as I thought, though. If you were monitoring it, I thought that it was refreshingly candid. There was a
very candid.
There was an exchange, you know. And again, I don't think there was any bombshell one way or the other. I think both sides can look to things and say, aha, like Comey's taking terrific notes and saying the president and administration lied and tried to defame me. But at the same time, as a very political creature, Comey leaks via a friend his notes to the New York Times for the purpose of opening up a special investigation on the president. What is that? I mean, I know what that is, but really, is that the director of the FBI's role? That just strikes me as a very strange
thing. Or is that just the day and age we live in now?
Well, I guess it is. But I don't think that makes him look like the Boy Scout that a lot of people like to, you know, view him as.
But I think we've all come to realize there are no Boy Scouts in this.
And this is the
or
best
Girl Scouts okay, anymore.
I guess not. Okay, so here's Susan Collins. So after, you know, an hour or so of testimony here, Susan Collins gets a chance to ask a question.
And it looks like Cassowitz is about to come out in just a minute. So we just got a 1 minute warning.
Okay, give me 45 seconds to let her ask the question that I think needs to be asked.
The three conversations in which you told him that he was not under investigation. The first was during your January 6th meeting, according to your testimony, in which it appears that you actually volunteered that assurance. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Did you limit that statement to counterintelligence investigations, or were you talking about any kind of FBI investigation?
I didn't use the term counterintelligence. I was speaking to him and briefing him about some salacious and unverified material. It was in the context of that he had a strong and defensive reaction about that not being true, and my reading of it was important for me to assure him we were not personally investigating him. And so the context then was actually narrower.
So Comey is saying that that was about that dossier. And when asked, am I being investigated about this? Comey was saying, no, you are not. Three times he assured him about that. He used the word narrow. You get the sense that he was talking about that. But you have obstruction of justice investigation, and you have a criminal investigation. And I'll be straight up with you. After 3 hours, it appears to me as though when Comey left, the president was not under investigation for either of those, but he could not speak about that now. He's been out of government, as he says, for a while. He's between positions. It's 1:29. So where are we now? Is Mr. Cassowitz speaking?
Well, it looks like we're still waiting. We were told a minute, but I'm not seeing anybody coming out. So I would say just keep talking.
Interrupt me as you feel necessary.
I will.
In fact, here's just one more comment from Susan Collins. This will be Comey.
Well, now I'm going to interrupt you. Here we go. Here he comes.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Mark Cassowitz, President Trump's personal lawyer. Contrary to numerous false press accounts leading up to today's hearing, Mr. Comey has now finally confirmed publicly what he repeatedly told President Trump privately. That is, that the president was not under investigation as part of any probe into Russian interference. The president, Mr. Comey also admitted that there is no evidence that a single vote changed as a result of any Russian interference. Mr. Comey's testimony also makes clear that the president never sought to impede the investigation into attempted Russian interference in the 2016 election. And in fact, according to Mr. Comey, the president told Mr. Comey, quote, it would be good to find out, close quote, in that investigation if there was, quote, some satellite associates of his who did something wrong, close quote. And he, President Trump, did not exclude anyone from that statement. Consistent with that statement, the president never, in form or substance, directed or suggested that Mr. Comey stop investigating anyone, including the president never suggested that Mr. Comey, quote, let Flynn go, close quote. As the president publicly stated the next day, he did say to Mr. Comey, quote, General Flynn is a good guy. He has been through a lot, close quote. And also, quote, asked how General Flynn is doing, close quote. Admiral Rogers testified today that the president never, quote, directed him to do anything illegal, immoral, unethical, or inappropriate, close quote, and never, quote, pressured him to do so, close quote. Director Coates said the same thing. The president likewise never pressured Mr. Comey. The president also never told Mr. Comey, quote, I need loyalty. I expect loyalty, close quote. He never said it in form, and he never said it in substance. Of course, the office of the president is entitled to expect loyalty from those who are serving the administration. And from before this president, took office to this day, it is overwhelmingly clear that there have been and continue to be those in government who are actively attempting to undermine this administration with selective and illegal leaks of classified information and privileged communications. Mr. Comey has now admitted that he is one of these leakers. Today, Mr. Comey admitted that he unilaterally and surreptitiously made unauthorized disclosures to the press of privileged communications with the president. The leaks of this privileged information began no later than March 2017, when friends of Mr. Comey have stated that he disclosed to them the conversations that he had with the president during their January 27th, 2017 dinner and February 14th, 2017 White House meeting. Today, Mr. Comey admitted that he leaked to friends of his purported memos of those privileged communications, one of which he testified was classified. Mr. Comey also testified that immediately after he was terminated, he authorized his friends to leak the contents of those memos to the press in order to, in Mr. Comey's words, quote, prompt the appointment of a special counsel, close quote. Although Mr. Comey testified that he only leaked the memos in response to a tweet, the public record reveals that the New York Times was quoting from those memos the day before the referenced tweet, which belies Mr. Comey's excuse for this unauthorized disclosure of privileged information and appears to be entirely retaliatory. We will leave it to the appropriate authorities to determine whether these leaks should be investigated along with all the others that are being investigated. In sum, it is now established that the president was not being investigated for colluding with or attempting to obstruct any investigation. As the committee pointed out today, these important facts for the country to know are virtually the only facts that have not been leaked during the course of these events. As he said yesterday, the president feels completely vindicated and is eager to continue moving forward with his agenda, with the business of this country, and with this public cloud removed. Thank you.
Looks like he's
and
walking
that wraps
away.
It up, John. Yeah. He is walking away. He's not going to take any questions.
And to be clear, because I may have suggested previously that he would be speaking before the panel, he was not called before the panel, the Senate Intelligence Committee. So he was just doing what
that was a press
conference.
Yeah. Exactly.
Which he chose not to answer any questions. He simply walked away. And so there it is. And by the way, the document that I have in front of me, the statement which was released a little bit in advance,
was what ended up what he was reading.
Pretty
we
much
were
what
getting
he
conflict,
said. Yeah.
We were getting conflicting messages there about that, so we weren't sure at the moment. But that is, and it did end up what he was reading.
And you know that's why you spend $1,200 on somebody an hour. That guy was pretty good.
Yeah.
You may agree or disagree with what he had to say, but they turned around what the former FBI director said, and maybe they had some of that language or some of their sort of framework for how they were going to position the president on this. Maybe they had that ready in advance, but clearly that was predicated on what James Comey said. And if you wanted to find a way to exonerate the president, I thought that was pretty compelling. It's not the end of it. but notice how at the end of his statement, he didn't say, let's leave it up to others to determine the truth or falsehood, the guilt or innocence. He said, we also think maybe we should investigate Comey, but we'll let other people look into that. So now he's
That's
actually
out of our hands.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that you need to. I'm just saying somebody needs to look into. We'll leave it up to somebody else. In fact, we will leave it to the appropriate authorities to determine whether. And I thought he was going to say whether the president, obstructed justice or did anything criminal. But he said, no, we will leave it to the appropriate authorities to determine whether this leak should be investigated. This leak, meaning the Comey leak, should be investigated along with others being investigated. That was the biggest head scratcher of them all, that he revealed that. And I don't know if Comey thinks that we're all going to look at that kind of weirdly. I mean, what are you? What was that, James Comey? What were you doing there? Okay, your thoughts and a few more comments from Comey's testimony still to come. Speaking of things presidential, we're sort of walking through James Comey's testimony before the Senate panel today. And of course, it's about Donald Trump. By the way, Donald Trump Jr.'s 40 tweets are before me. He tweeted at least 40 times in the first 2.5 hours of the testimony today. And he was on a roll. Sometimes you fall in love with your own tweets and you just kind of get into a groove. And the next thing you know, you look up and you've put 3-4 dozen of them out there. And then you go back and see how many likes and retweets you've got. Sometimes you retweet people yourself. You know, he's very, very defensive because it's his dad. He's 39 years old, though. So at some point, they've got to unhitch that trailer, that wagon from that donkey or whatever. There's a metaphor out there. I'm not nailing it. But at some point, you got to go, I know that's my dad, but I have to stop reacting like his son. In fact, I have to stop reacting altogether. I won't go into that in any great detail now, but I will say this. President Roosevelt, who never once tweeted, is going to join us this summer, Saturday, August 12th. Saturday, August 12th. President Roosevelt and I will be on stage together. We won't be talking about this per se. Whenever Roosevelt comes to town, we let him entertain and amuse and inform us about some of his great adventure stories and some of his brilliant thoughts and some of the things that are still America today were Teddy Roosevelt's ideas. In fact, if ever there was a good time to hear Teddy Roosevelt, it'll be this August. And so he's going to be on the stage with me at the College of DuPage. And then you get a chance to ask questions, too. So if you want to ask him about his trip to South America or his hunting expeditions, his safaris in Africa, you'll get a chance to do that. If you want to ask him what he thinks about immigration policies or tweets, you can do that as well. And I want you to circle on your calendar the date, Saturday, August 12th. That's when he's going to be to town. Ticket information will come your way on our website and on this show next week, August 12th, 1:45 on WGN. This is John Williams. Eric Zorn, the Chicago Tribune columnist, friend of mine, and also a not infrequent guest on this radio station, joins us for just a minute here. We're going to record our Mincing Rascals podcast tomorrow and broadcast part of that on Saturday. Hi, Eric. How are you?
Hey, John. Good. How are you?
What's your takeaway? Good, thank you. What's your headline on the Comey testimony today?
Well, I guess I think that it did not do incredible damage to Trump because it confirmed a couple of things that he'd been saying, that Comey had been kind of telling him that he wasn't under investigation. It looked like Comey was trying to soothe him a little bit and keep him quiet. I thought generally Comey came off as being very credible, and his portrayal of Trump as a liar and an oaf and a bully were very strong. Again, I he didn't make the leap to obstruction of justice, any kind of impeachable offense. So I'm sure that's how the right wing media is going to be spinning it. I haven't been watching. I've been writing here. So
what was your reaction to his leaking via a friend his notes to the New York Times?
I thought his excuse for that was pretty peculiar, as is his explanation that he doesn't have copies of these memos. He's saying, like, I gave my copies to Mueller.
And then Senator, I think it was Lankford, said, well, do you think we could get copies? And he goes, this is so bizarre. He goes, probably. And there was a dead pause in the room, and everybody's like, well, yeah.
Unless you're scrawling something out on parchment, you know, everything automatically is backed up to your hard drive, probably to the cloud. It's not like, you know, you write something and you give it, like there's one copy of something and you give it to somebody else and it no longer exists.
But Eric, that was such a political act. Do you think that sort of impugns his integrity or his testimony?
Impugns his testimony. I'm not sure what there is not to believe about his testimony. I certainly credit everything that he says about how he deals. Nothing he said about Trump is inconsistent with what we already know about Trump.
All right. Well, maybe not. I mean, what do we know about Trump? But what we read in the New York Times, and there was Comey saying some of that's not true. Why would he do that? Leak that to initiate a special investigation? If he didn't have a political agenda, if he didn't hate Trump so much that he wanted to bury the guy, and if that's who Comey is, then doesn't that taint what he is saying otherwise?
Well, he buried him with a memo that he wrote contemporaneously. The question is not really, I don't think, the authenticity of that memo. It's why he leaked it like that. I mean, his excuse was, if I gave it to the press, it would be like a flock feeding seagulls on a beach or something like that, so that he leaked it through a friend. Again, you know, that criticism would be much more valid coming from the Republicans if that place wasn't, you know, if Trump himself wasn't like a huge leaker. I mean, leaking goes on all the time in Washington. I'm not sure that you just discredit everything that he had to say.
Well, then my advice to him would be not to out yourself for leaking it. He did not need to volunteer the method by which the New York Times got that memo. I mean, I just don't understand the logic of any of that.
Well, I guess it means he's honest. It did seem like a very peculiar thing that he certainly had every right at that point to call the New York Times and say, hey, look, I took notes on these things, and here they are. I mean, I don't think anyone could have faulted him for that, because they weren't, as he pointed out in the testimony, they weren't confidential. They weren't government property. He's a private citizen.
Yeah, no, he gets to do that, I guess. Fine.
It does seem a little, and somebody sort of asked him about some of the other leaks that have been coming out, things that had foretold some of the things that he was going to talk about today. And I think like a lot of people in Washington, he was among the leakers.
I think Rubio's point about this was well taken. He said, so all of the stuff that was leaked, but three times, in fact, you told the president he wasn't under investigation. Granted, that may have been a narrow statement, but three times that happened. That's been out there for a while. Nobody believed it. Why didn't the fact that the president was not under investigation, why did that not get leaked, says Rubio? We all were assuming the opposite. And then here's the FBI director.
Well, I think the thing about that is first of all, it's hard to leak a negative, right? I think it's hard to prove a negative. And the other thing is that, I mean, one might also say that he's not yet under investigation, which is, I think, sort of the tone of what Comey was saying.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that.
Read between the lines, there was a lot of sense of like, well, we didn't have that then, but, you know, this isn't over yet, and the FBI, former FBI director is going to take this and run with it, so you never know.
Well, I'm not clear about this, Eric. Can you clear it up for me? Was the FBI, was Comey saying that while he was there, Trump was not under investigation criminally or for obstruction of justice? Are both of those facts true?
I think it's both true. Yes, he was not personally under investigation. They're looking into right now his campaign, people in his campaign, what they were doing with Russia, and ultimately, you know, the person at the head of the campaign was Donald Trump. And if these things were going on under him, the question then becomes, you know, what did he know?
We're not there yet.
I admit that. So that's why I say he's not yet under investigation. He may never be under investigation. They may never be able to show or prove that there were some freelancers under him. I think Trump referred to them as satellites, right?
And, the
people who were under him who were doing stuff. You know, I don't have a feeling that Donald Trump is a really organized, meticulous guy when it comes to this kind of stuff. That he's a detail man. So that it's perfectly possible there were people under him who were orchestrating stuff with Russia, and they either weren't telling him, or they told him and he forgot,
or he
didn't process it. I mean, I don't think of Trump as like a mastermind. So that's why I kind of wonder whether he actually has the ability to collude with Russia or something like that.
The parsing of words is fascinating to me. The fact that Loretta Lynch told him to describe the investigation as a matter, not as an investigation, was utterly disappointing. I have to pause for a second. Do you have another minute, or you got to go back to your keyboard, your parchments?
I do. No, for you always, John.
Stay right there. Eric Zorn, you may want to jump in. I hope you do. 312 1-800-981-7200. Eric, a couple of questions from some of our listeners. You got a second?
Sure.
Julie, jump in there. Thanks for waiting. What did you want to say?
Hi, thank you. I think the reason Comey brought out his leaking the message to the reporter was that if he hadn't said it, during the course of the upcoming investigation, it would have come out, and he'd have certainly been accused of trying to hide something, which wouldn't have looked good either.
Yeah, I guess that explains him outing himself, but it still doesn't exactly explain the behavior. I'm a little mystified that he chose to do that anyway.
No, I hadn't thought about that till you said it, but I think that's why he did it now.
Yeah. Interesting point. Thank you, Julie. Comment on that at all, Eric?
No, I agree. I think it's a very strange thing that he did, leaking it like that when he could have, when he had every right to just put it out there. It wasn't like, yeah, it was, you know, so.
Melissa, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. So I had the opportunity to watch on and off this morning, but I was curious on your take on Senator McCain's portion.
That was confusing to everybody, wasn't it?
I was taken aback. I have supported McCain in the past and definitely honor his service and what he's been through. But he got names wrong. He was trying to imply that Hillary's investigation was somehow tied to this Russian investigation, and it simply wasn't. That's what he was trying to imply, that hers was over, yet yeah, this was continuing. He seemed very off his game today.
And I thought he was on his game yesterday. This sort of off-the-cuff attitude that McCain brings, I thought, really worked well yesterday. Today, it just muddied the waters. What did you think, Eric?
He was confused. It was almost sad. And he was trying to ask, like, well, you finished the Hillary Clinton investigation. Why didn't you finish this investigation? And Comey seemed genuinely confused by that, as was I watching. It's like, well, what are you asking? Like, he fired me. We didn't, you know, this investigation is just beginning. It was very strange. I think there's something a little bit wrong with Senator McCain today.
Have you posted your comments online today already?
My column is going to be up as soon as I finish it, so it'll be soon.
We'll be reading then in tomorrow's paper as well, and we'll listen for you on our Mincing Rascals podcast. We'll drop that on Friday and broadcast it on Saturday. Thanks, Eric.
I'll see you in the studio, John. Bye.
That's Eric Zorn, Chicago Tribune, and the Mincing Rascals podcast, which you can subscribe to wherever you get your finer podcasts. It's called The Mincing Rascals.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Whew.
Here's John Williams.
I am mentally spent. We've been thinking big thoughts for a solid hour. And by the way, there's no fuzz on that.
Lord have mercy.
I think I used the new hot expression correctly. There's no fuzz on that. Hey, Kim Gordon. Ask me a question in which I can answer in the affirmative. Something that I can say yes to.
Isn't it a beautiful day?
Oh, it sure is. And I'll tell you what, there's no fuzz on that. In fact, I wonder if I can do it without... Do that again. I want to try it again.
John, isn't it a beautiful day?
Oh, there's no fuzz on that.
Yeah, you don't even have to answer in the affirmative.
Right. I think it is the affirmative. You know, you don't need to double down. It's already pre-doubled.
How long till we see that on T-shirts, coffee mugs?
Oh, that's going to be on T-shirts. There's no fuzz on that.
Maybe we should go trademark that.
I know. Doggone it.
NoFuzzOnThat.com.
Hashtag NoFuzzOnThat. I need to copyright no fuzz on that. Although the way that he used it, it almost sounded to me like that is an expression that's already part of the sort of, you know, American language, and I just haven't been paying attention. I'm 57, so it's quite possible that something got under my radar recently.
I'm 52, and I haven't heard that.
Yeah, we need somebody with a 16-year-old. A friend of mine has kids who are like 13 and 15, and they're always cueing us in on, oh, that is, you know, blah, 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 blah. But I don't have one. I need to rent a 14-year-old. And by the way, by that I mean I just want somebody to catch me up on common language. That's what I'm saying. You know, because I don't know if you've heard that expression before, fine, you need to tell us. But right now I'm about to start printing it up on T-shirts and selling them on Michigan Avenue. No fuzz on this. All right. It's 2:11 on WGN. This is John Williams. We are following the Comey testimony today. Also, the president's attorney spoke a short while ago and was much more articulate than I think the president's son, who said hashtag losers when describing the media and James Comey. The president's attorney said not only is the president fully exonerated, but maybe we ought to open up an investigation into that Comey fellow, because you know what? I don't think what he did was on the up and up. There's fuzz all over that. Speaking of fuzz, I see that I've been retweeted by a person who describes himself on his Twitter profile this way. It's Ozzy Pants, whoever Ozzy Pants is. He's following me now and retweeted me. Ozzy Pants describes himself as God, guns, and the Constitution. Obama sucks. I block all Democratic trolls like Obama. I won't negotiate. I will support the GOP nominee. And that person retweeted me when I said, Comey's use of a friend to leak thoughts on POTUS and Flynn is weird. Fuzz all over that. But now I'm being retweeted by the enemy. I hope that does not reflect poorly on me. Okay, it's 212. The number's 312-981-7200. We've been walking you through some of the testimony today. I believe we are now at cut number 9. Actually, we're at cut number 8. This is, all right, Aleph, we'll do cut number 8. This is Martin Heinrich, the senator who very specifically wanted the former FBI director to tell us what the Russians did. We're so back and forth on so many things here. Let's just go back to step one. What did the Russians do relative to the 2016 election?
The Russians interfered in our election during the 2016 cycle. They did it with purpose. They did it with sophistication. They did it with overwhelming technical efforts. And it was an active measures campaign driven from the top of that government. There is no fuzz on that.
That's the first time he used that. Senator Heinrich said to him, well, and this is Comey number 9, Elif. So Senator Heinrich says, anticipating that we all are going to be debating the president's truthfulness versus the former FBI director's truthfulness.
You've told us that the president asked you to back off the Flynn investigation. The president told a reporter.
Not in that dinner.
Oh, fair enough. Told the reporter he never did that. You've testified that the president asked for your loyalty in that dinner. The White House denies that. A lot of this comes down to who should we believe? Do you want to say anything as to why we should believe you?
Probably, my mother raised me not to say things like this about myself, so I'm not going to. I think people should look at the whole body of my testimony. Mm-hmm. Because as I used to say to juries, when I talked about a witness, you can't cherry pick it.
Yeah. And then he went on to say, you need to look at the body of what I'm saying and believe that that is true. And, you know, I guess it'll be up to maybe the panel, maybe the Congress, maybe the American people to decide who's telling the truth. Senator Durbin is flying this afternoon and is not able to join us. We reached out to our senator and asked him for a statement. He said this, the question for the American people, this is Dick Durbin speaking, the question for the American people is, who do you trust? Director Comey kept extensive records of what President asked of him and agreed to testify publicly under oath. That speaks volumes. No person, not even the President, should try to influence or stop a criminal investigation. Special Counsel Mueller is investigating any criminal activity, and he is the right person for this historic assignment. Plenty of you, though, will conclude after Comey's testimony today that the president did not obstruct justice. One thing that sort of gets lost in all of this is that, for instance, it is the fact that the president did fire Comey after telling him on 3 separate occasions, there's that number again, that he supports him, that he wants him in that position. He then fired him when Comey did not pledge his loyalty to the president and did not agree to let this thing go. So whatever you want to say about the president not following up, not bringing this issue up again and again, I mean, there was a lot of testimony that showed that while the president did address this, he wasn't unrelenting about it. He did fire the FBI director. So is that a sort of, you know, de facto evidence that he was obstructing justice? Because remember, the president also said, I hope you will let this go. And the very first series of questions against, or one of them, Mr. Comey was, he said, hope. He didn't say I direct. He didn't say I order you. He didn't say I command you. He said, I hope. Have you ever heard of a conviction based on somebody's hope? Comey says no, but that I took that to be a directive. So now we're parsing words here. It's 216. Okay, let's pick up a couple of phone lines, too, if you want to jump in. 312-981-7200. And as we go to our phone calls, let's go to track 10, Elle, if we're going to play track 10. This is Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri, and it goes back to, Elle, by the way, I can hardly see you in there. We're going to be ready to play track 10 here, right? And this is Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri on sharing that conversation that he had with the president about Flynn to the New York Times.
You said after you were dismissed, you gave information to a friend so that friend could get that information into the public media.
Correct.
What kind of information was that? What kind of information did you give to a friend?
That the Flynn conversation, that the president had asked me to let the Flynn, I mean, I'm forgetting my exact own words, but the conversation in the Oval Office.
So you didn't consider your memo or your sense of that conversation to be a government document? You considered to be somehow your own personal document that you could share with the media as you wanted to?
Correct.
Through a friend?
It's 217. And one more track for you here. This is Comey recalling the strangest dinner date, maybe in the history of dinner dates. Comey is called into the green room, and there at an oval table is the president and just Comey. At first, he thought maybe his family was going to be at the dinner. Then later, he thought other officials will be at the dinner. But no, it's just the two of them, and that's when the president sort of puts on that full-court press. This is him describing how that dinner was set up. This is Comey 11.
And called himself and said, can you come over for dinner tonight? And I said, yes, sir. He said, well, six work. I think he said six first. And then he said, I was going to invite your whole family, but we'll do that next time. I wanted you to come over. And is that a good time? I said, sir, whatever works for you. And then he said, how about 6:30? And I said, whatever works for you, sir. And then I hung up and had to call my wife and break a date with her. I was supposed to take her out to dinner that night.
That's one of the all-time great excuses for breaking a date.
Yeah. In retrospect, I love spending time with my wife. I wish I'd been there that night.
I'd rather be with my wife than at that bizarro dinner. It's 219. Gene, you go next. You're on WGN. I'm John Williams. Hi, what do you want to say?
Hi. Months and months and months ago, there were many published reports about his lawyers in New York City and, of course, I'm sure around the world. But the New York City reports were that his lawyers soon learned they could never go and see him alone. Because they had to go in pairs. Because if they didn't, the next morning, the agreement that was established the night before would be 180 from what the lawyer carried away.
Oh, no kidding.
That was published a lot.
You mean in a real estate transaction or something like that?
Yeah, whatever they were working on him with, whether it was illegal, he was being sued, or whatever it was, they never went alone.
Interesting point. Thanks for the call, Gene.
Sure.
Appreciate you jumping in there. And let's go to April. This is John, and you're on WGN. Hi, April.
Hi there. I know in a court of law it's different, but I'm a teacher and a mom, and when a kid has done something that maybe I'm not so happy about, I often get down, look them in the eye with a pretty firm look and say, I certainly hope you'll make different choices in the future, or, you know, things like that. And we all know that means you're going to do what I say. So
you're speaking to the word hope here, aren't you?
Yes, yes. And I realize in a court of law, it's something that they can't use, but we all know it's used in that way as a very soft threat, you know, like, you're going to do what I say.
Right, yeah. Well, did you watch or...
It's a polite way of saying it, so...
Did you watch or hear any of the testimony this afternoon, this morning?
I did not, no.
Yeah.
I wish I would, but I was not able to today.
Fair enough. April, thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you joining us. 312-981-7200. I thought the senators acquitted themselves really well. You know, to the person, Republican or Democrat, John McCain wobbled. Let's put him to the side. But I think it's just a very interesting exercise. I'll be honest with you. I felt that even when I didn't agree with what some of them were saying, that these are really smart people. It was a very civil proceeding. At one point, I believe it was Comey. I'll go through my notes here. But one of them said, and it might have been the former FBI director, that the world needs to see that this is how an adult democracy works. And I went, yay. And, you know, Donald Trump is being accused of a lot of things, and a lot of times people say he's childish, and I don't know if that was a sideways dig at the president's, you know, sort of attitude or personality. But when they said, this is how an adult democracy works, a mature adult government operates, I thought, yeah, even though we're sort of loose in our moorings right now, this very process makes me feel good. And I thought the way the senators were observing the time, not cutting each other off, not getting obnoxious, not saying you're a liar and throwing chairs, things you see in either other countries or in the House, I thought it just looked appropriate. I felt good about the intelligence, about the pace, about the fairness of the proceeding today. We should not take that for granted. By the way, to the point of the woman a moment ago who said, I'm a school teacher, and sometimes you don't use the exact word, but the kid knows your intent when you get down to their nose and you say, I want you to make better decisions. It was about the president's use of the word hope when he told Comey that I hope you can look the other way on this Flynn thing. And one of the senators actually was talking about that very use of language to Comey, and they were both strangely on the same page.
When a president of the United States in the Oval Office says something like, I hope, or I suggest, or would you, do you take that as a directive?
Yes. Yes. It rings in my ear as kind of, well, no one rid me of this meddlesome priest.
I was just going to quote that in 1170, December 29, Henry II said, who will rid me of this meddlesome priest? And then the next day he was killed. Thomas à Becket. That's exactly the same situation.
See, that's why you elect those guys, because they're smarter than you. They can just drop that in. Carmella, this is John, and you're on WGN Radio. What do you want to say?
To when Hillary Clinton testified before Congress for 3 days and Comey comes up and says, well, he can't prove intent when there was miles and miles of intent in her emails. And then he didn't take one bit of note of that, but every word he talked to Trump, he took notes with. Come on. This guy's a liar and he's a fraud and he works for the Clinton Foundation. He gets a six-figure salary figure from the Clinton Foundation.
Comey gets a six-figure salary from the Clinton Foundation? Is that right?
Yep, he works for the Clinton Foundation. You look it up.
I will. Thank you for the call. Go to Annette. This is John. You're on WGN. Hi, Annette.
Hi. I fear that we're at risk for normalizing this really scary behavior by the president. It struck me, I forgot what congressman asked him, has he ever been called into the Oval Office by any other president that he served under and made to feel like he needed to take notes or made to feel like he was being asked to do something that he felt was unethical? And he said that in the three times he met with Obama and the one time he met with Bush, he never felt anywhere close to how he felt when he was called to the Oval Office repeatedly.
Yeah. Yeah.
By President Trump. And it just, I feel like, you know, we're just accepting everything he does and making it normal. And it's not. It's not the way a president should be acting.
Somebody said to me earlier today, if any other president or anybody else had done any one of these things, we would have lost our minds and fired the guy. But when it's Trump, you don't know which one to pick, and he ends up getting away with them all.
Exactly. And Chris Christie was saying, well, it's just how New Yorkers talk. It's how New Yorkers act. Well, Trump used to, you know, dealing with whoever he deals with, maybe the mob in his real estate dealings from time to time. You know, maybe that's acceptable. But as a president of the United States, it's not.
Thanks for the phone call.
Thank you.
It's Annette. And finally, Rob, this is John. Jump in there, Rob. I'll let you be the last word on this.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Good. What do you want to say?
I'm a retired defense attorney, and I think that Comey's testimony made quite clear that Trump was appropriate in firing him. If Comey felt uncomfortable and you hold a high office, you must tell your superior that you are uncomfortable and the conversation is inappropriate. He waffles and he dithers, and you can't have that in an FBI director. And then he's quite frankly, so prickly that he's offended by what he's called. And I'm not a great Trump supporter, but I don't want my FBI director to be that prickly that he can't take being called a name or stand up to the president. You've got to do that. And that's why I think it's appropriate that he was fired.
Thanks for the phone call. All right, that wraps it up. It's 2:30 on WGN. By the way, we just snoped what the previous caller said about Comey getting a six-figure salary from the Clinton Foundation. Here's what the fact checkers say. FBI Director James Comey has worked for some organizations that have donated to or partnered with the Clinton Foundation. He's worked with some organizations that have given money to the Clinton Foundation. What's false? There's no proof that Comey has directly benefited from any of his employer's relationships with the Clinton Foundation. If you did want to feel sort of good about America and the great experiment that we are here in this little shining city on a hill, I'll play one more pretty impressive soundbite after our 2:50 break. Rokan and Anna DeVlantis will be in the studio in a little while. I'm sure they've got some great guests and some expert analysis for you, too, as well as some of the local scene as well. In fact, Mark Carman joins us now, WGN Radio Sports. Hey, Carm, how are you?
I'm good, John. Good to be with you.
What's this Addison Russell story? I'm reading it everywhere now, including the Daily Mail of London. The MLB has opened an investigation into Chicago Cubs shortstop Addison Russell following claims that he hit his wife. I'm looking at now the screen grabs of tweets from a friend of hers alleging that he was abusive to her mentally and physically. And she herself was tweeting not that, but that she's anxious for a new beginning and she's going to get away from him, et cetera, et cetera. What's going on here?
Well, not good, obviously, for Addison Russell, for the Cubs, most importantly, his wife or ex-wife-to-be. And, I mean, he has a kid with her and a kid with someone else prior to that. Unfortunately, John, I mean, this has kind of been rumored and out around, not out, but known by a bunch of people around Addison for quite a while, and I sort of got first wind of this all the way back in last year's playoffs. So you kind of obviously hope these things are not true. And you also certainly hope that if they are, they'll get handled outside of the public and social media and posts like that where, you know, a good friend of hers is chiming in. It's and I'm not blaming anyone here. It's certainly not the victim. But it's you just kind of – this is not a good scene for the Cubs. And MLB, there's precedent here where guys can be suspended even if there isn't an investigation. And right now, there certainly isn't a criminal investigation into Addison Russell, although MLB and the Cubs are going to look into what happened. I'm sure they'll talk to Addison, and I'm sure they'll talk to those who are involved. So he's not in the lineup tonight, and it's possible that he could be suspended for a bit here. We'll see.
Well, he's not in the lineup tonight. Is it because of this?
I mean, he's been struggling. The guy's hitting close to 200, so you could say it's around the field or what he's doing on the field. But I would think that this coming out today has a large part in why he's not playing tonight. But he's been splitting time right now with Javi Baez at shortstop. So, I mean, you could say it's performance or what's going on. Who knows? But
she posted,
either way,
she posted, being free to be able to make your own choices for your own happiness beats being cheated on, lied to, and disrespected any day. So she's unhappy with the relationship, but she doesn't allege any abuse there. But her friend said in a comment, hateful is cheating on your wife, mentally and physically abusing her. Melissa did not want that out, but I'll say it. He hit her in front of Aiden and Mila. Those are their kids, I guess. But let's worry about Melissa being hateful, she says. So maybe that's his sort of getting back at her. He says she's hateful, but she said, well, you were cheating on him. You were cheating on her, mentally and physically abusing her, and hit her in front of her kids. So that's where that's sort of...
Right. And she's getting a lot of... Melissa's getting a lot of blowback in the social media world. So I think her friend is coming to her defense that way, not necessarily just at Addison, but at people telling her to not talk about it, you know, that type of anger is out there. Like, hey, what are you doing to Addison Russell?
Right.
So, and so her friend comes to her defense. You know, here's the thing too, and it shouldn't be all about money. I mean, that's probably, you know, should be way, way, way down the list. But
when you're talking about having a separation from somebody and moving on with your life, impacting, if you're really not going to follow through with perhaps, you know, a criminal procedure, you know, she's done, I would think, some damage to his ability to make dollars, right? I mean, this is not good for him. So just this, going about it by going on social media is not the recommended way to do these things. I mean, this should be handled in private. I'm not, again, not blaming the victim, but you just look at what's going on and thinking, why would you put this out? Because now she's going to get tracked by all the lunatics on social media, and to what end?
Well, okay, but I mean, if he has been abusive to her, then you should 100% pursue that. Get yourself an attorney, you know, report it to the police, do whatever it is that needs to happen. But going after somebody on social media only complicates things, doesn't it?
Yeah, I 100% support her. If she wants, if something did happen and she wants to go to the police, she absolutely 100% should. I'm not saying anything other than that. But to do it this way, it's just, I don't really see the win in it for her.
Well, okay, so what happens with Major League Baseball or the Cubs? If somebody is accused of this but not convicted of something, abuse of a spouse or a girlfriend, do they have rules in place? Then you're automatically suspended, or we wait until there's a conviction? How does that all fall?
Major League Baseball is going to investigate. They're going to talk to Melissa. They're going to talk to Addison. They're going to talk to people around it, perhaps her friend. And there does not have to be a criminal investigation for him to be suspended. Aroldis Chapman was suspended 30 games for allegedly firing shots in a garage and at his girlfriend slash wife, I forget exactly. And, you know, there was no criminal charges, but he was suspended 30 games. Other players have been suspended up to 80 games. For step off the field where they were never actually charged. There were charges pending, but they hadn't actually gone to court and had the procedure. So there's a guy for the Braves who was suspended for over 80 games. So MLB, depending on what they find out, along with the Cubs, could absolutely suspend Addison Russell.
She's 23, and he's 23 also, isn't he?
Yes, he's 23 years old.
Does he have a reputation? Do people know him to be hot-headed? I only see him as this smiling, nice guy on TV.
No, that's what's so shocking about it. And when I first heard about this last year in the playoffs, I was like, you got to be kidding me. Because he comes across more as, you know, if you were going to do a spectrum closer to Derek Jeter or closer to a domestic violence abuser, I would say closer to Derek Jeter, much closer. But you never know what's going on, right? I mean, off the field is off the field, and on the field, that's a whole other thing.
Right. All right, anything else I need to ask you about on this story? He's not in the lineup tonight. Cubs are on a bit of a winning streak. That's really nice to see. And when does he get back in the lineup? If there is an open investigation, is it possible that he wouldn't be in the lineup for a while?
I would assume the Cubs are going to talk before the game tonight, and that'll shed light onto what the process will be. I would expect that, at least for the time being, I would expect him to be on the field. But how that plays out in the next couple of days over the weekend, who knows?
Okay, Carm. Appreciate your time this afternoon.
Thank you, John. Yep, thank you, John.
Mark Carman, WGN Radio Sports.
But we're talking about a foreign government that, using technical intrusion and lots of other methods, tried to shape the way we think, we vote, we act. That is a big deal. And people need to recognize it. It's not about Republicans or Democrats. They're coming after America, which I hope we all love equally. They want to undermine our credibility in the face of the world. They think that this great experiment of ours is a threat to them. And so they're going to try to run it down and dirty it up as much as possible. That's what this is about. And they will be back, because we remain, as difficult as we can be with each other, we remain that shining city on the hill, and they don't like it.
I thought the orchestra was a little heavy-handed for a Senate hearing, but there was Aaron Sorkin and the gang. That's an ad lib, folks. He was not reading off a teleprompter. There was no fuzz on that. Not sure I used that properly. Violetta Podramatic is in traffic, and she's been counseling me on the use of the new phrase, which I've latched onto, no fuzz on that.
I like it, but I wanted you to know you should take credit for it, because the kids have not been saying that.
Elif, are the kids in your neighborhood ever dropping no fuzz on that?
No, not yet.
That's a new one. Okay, well, then I'm the...
You're starting it, though.
The FBI director said it, but I'm the one to notice it. That's how you declare certainty. If you want to say, no, it's very clear. Earlier in his testimony, he was asked about whether or not the Russians did, in fact, try to manipulate the election. And he said, oh, there's no fuzz on that. Wow, what a great line.
That's pretty unique.
How has that been out there and I didn't know about it? But maybe it's not been out there. Maybe this is new.
Well, if you start using it, then you are a trendsetter.
I know, but I'm terrible at this sort of thing. I'll get it wrong. I'll say, not very fuzzy. You know, I'll drop, and it's my own ball, but I'm going to drop it. But if you ask me, so the proper use of this, and this is sort of the germ of this, so you all now know, the proper way to use no fuzz on that will be if somebody asks you something and you wanted to reply in the affirmative, rather than say yes, you say, there's no fuzz on that.
Violetta, how's the traffic looking? Does it look good or bad? Or
is
it
bad?
Oh, no, you complicated it. That's too muddy. The water.
See,
is the traffic good, Violetta?
There is fuzz on that.
And to say there's a little bit of fuzz doesn't work because I think I don't think the opposite is true. No fuzz on that does not convey any message.
Right.
It's only used in the affirmative. At least now in its sort of nascent stage.
Is it hot out?
It's hot out. Well, okay, but it's not. But it's not hot out because
it is hot out.
But it has to be. If it's 100 degrees, you'd say, oh, there's no fuzz on that.
Okay,
it's an exaggerate. It's when you want to exaggerate.
It's when you're doubled down.
You just have to feel
it. Crystal clear.
It's just when you feel like saying no fuzz on that.
All right. 312-981-7200. If you want to help us out, give us an example. Tell us how you're going to now use the exciting new saying, there's no fuzz on that. We'll take your calls, suggestions, and recommendations. The other takeaway, the other line that you know is going to be repeated, well, there are a few maybe today, but Lordy, I hope there's tapes. There's a quote from the former FBI director. If you're just joining us, we've spent some time on the show today talking about the testimony, playing back cuts from it, including the one you just heard. I did not think that either side won the day. The president's attorney, Mark Kasowitz, spoke afterwards at a press conference. He did not take questions. He did not appear before the panel, but he simply read a statement, and he said that it's unequivocal that Trump has been exonerated here and that maybe we ought to open up an investigation into Comey, because James Comey's the one that released through a friend his notes to the New York Times. And at a very weird moment in the testimony today, one of the senators, and it was kind of a good question, said, well, can we get those notes? Because Comey evidently didn't even make a copy of them. I don't know how that happens. Don't you type things up on a word processor, on a Word document on your computer, and you therefore have a copy of that? Are these handwritten notes? But somehow or another, Comey gives his notes to his friend, the professor at Columbia, at the law school at Columbia. So his friend then curries these notes physically or forwards them to the New York Times. It was from those notes that the New York Times was writing some stories. Interesting how that works out, right? So the senators are all looking at each other going, well, we could use those notes. We're the ones doing the investigation. Could we get those notes? And then Comey sort of shrugs and goes, well, I guess so. So I wonder if the New York Times, and I'll bet you they were watching, I wonder if the New York Times is going to now turn the notes over to the government. A lot of times it's the other way around, isn't it? It's the, you know, you wonder if the government is going to maybe give their notes to the media. But here is the question, is the media actually going to hand its government notes back to the Senate? And I don't know how that's going to go, but I don't think that looked good for the former FBI director. Mary, you're on the air. What did you want to say? Hi, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. I'm just calling. I am a social worker, and I work for a domestic violence shelter. And when you were discussing the social media aspect of, you know, the abuse issue, and I agree with you that if it's not a proven issue, it shouldn't, you know, be put out there according to reputation and that. But I do disagree that too much of domestic violence is not talked about and it is hidden.
Yeah.
And that actually is a harm for the families and the victims of domestic violence. So when you're discussing not getting it out there, that's just disturbing to me.
Yeah, I'm sorry. What did you say your relationship with this topic is? You're a social worker?
I'm a social worker, and I work at a domestic violence shelter.
Well, so just very specifically about this, I really appreciate your call, Mary, but so say a woman has been abused or is being abused by her boyfriend or her husband. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows about that. And in this case, it's a high-profile person. Do you suggest
Correct.
That they tweet that out or put that on Facebook and say, I'm not going to put up with your abuse anymore, that sort of thing?
I believe that it is important that it reaches people that are being abused to know that, yes, I won't take a victim stance. Yes, I will stand up for myself. I will talk about it. I won't keep it as hidden, which many times the face of someone that abuses appears to be in public very different than in private.
Well, you know,
so
my point.
It is important.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. My point is that if you've got a case, if you're being abused, and if you literally have a case against the guy or want to make a legal case against this guy, mm-hmm. then get yourself an attorney or a public defender. Get the best help you can get. Fighting it out on a social platform, to me, is more making you feel good, but isn't going to make your case any better. And I wonder if it doesn't actually complicate your life a little, you know?
Well, you see, where I disagree with that is it needs to be talked about. It people need to know that, yes, maybe this is a famous case and this could get more airtime for other people that are going through it, that are afraid to speak up, that are afraid to talk about it.
Ann and Roe are in the studio. I got 60 more seconds I need. So will you let me read this and then you guys can get rolling?
Sure. Certainly.
My apologies. If you want to borrow 60 seconds from Justin later on or whatever
we
it is.
We do all the time.
I've actually heard that. And I wonder, how does he feel about that? Because it goes well for y'all. Mm-hmm. It's thoroughly enjoyable.
We enjoy the chats. I think sometimes he has to move his show around because of
Have you noticed any cracked or sinking concrete around your home? How about your driveway, your sidewalks, your garage floor, your patios? Besides looking bad, uneven concrete makes it easy to trip and fall, and that poses a safety hazard. You like to fix that problem? PermaSeal's got solutions. PermaSeal's poly-level foam can be injected beneath concrete surfaces. It'll level and prevent future settlement. Call PermaSeal today, 1-800-421-SEAL, for a free evaluation. Unlike traditional mud-jacking methods, poly-level foam is lightweight. It will not add extra weight to the already sinking and unstable area. PermaSeal's poly-level solutions are done with minimal disruption, quickly and at a fraction of the cost of concrete replacement. PolyLevel is the best, most durable solution. Call 1-800-421-SEAL, 1-800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net. Okay, kids, here you go.
All right. Boy, do we ever. There's a lot going on here now. Don't get me started.
There is.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Did you score that? Did one
yes.
side, which way did the needle tip today?
I have, in terms of losers, four major losers. Mm-hmm. In terms of winners, no winners. There were no winners there
Thank
today.
You, Donald Jr.
Yeah. There were no winners today.
Were you following the president's son? He tweeted 40 times, and he was counting up winners and losers on his Twitter feed today.
Oh, he was?
Oh, you didn't
Donald
know that?
I did not know that.
Donald Jr. was ticked. He was ticked that they were making fun of his dad. That they were going after his dad.
Yeah.
He was mad.
Yeah.
Hashtag losers.
Loser.
Loser. You know what? Who's a loser? Donald Jr. is a loser. Wait, he's my son.
No, he's not.
No, he's a genius.
But the president himself was not live tweeting the event, which many expected.
I was so disappointed.
Well,
he's been quiet for a while.
He made a speech in front of a religious group today.
Yeah, but he was so available for part of the
prepared. Earlier. He had to get prepared for that before he got all religious with him.
And did the lamestream media cover that? Not really. Were they there? No.
Even Fox News. I thought for a second Fox News was going to cut away to that speech, but it was kind of going well. It sort of went well for the president in some respects today.
I think you're right.
The biggest loser here, I think the headline for me, the biggest loser is Loretta Lynch and Jeff Sessions.
Yeah.
Because Jeff Sessions, they couldn't talk about why he was going to have to recuse himself in open session, and then Loretta Lynch was apparently in the tank for the Clinton campaign.
I didn't see and the use of the word matter versus investigate.
Sure, yeah. That was
how
significant.
How stupid is that?
Yeah. So it's the whole thing sucked. But we are going to talk to Michael Steele about it. We're going to have a legal analysis from Mike Monaco. We'll play stuff for you that because you're driving home now. You haven't maybe heard a lot of it today. And we'll just get you everything you need to know about this.
I'm all ears, Rokan.
Coming your way. Thank you, John Williams.